Okay, you have a panel here this evening of four people, as you know. On my right is Chris Sutton, who is currently chair of CBI Wales, and who is at the end of this month coming off the business minister's construction group, which again is an interesting time because construction's finally beginning to pick up again. Is that something to do with you leaving, Chris, or not? he's a chartered surveyor by training. Is a director of Jones Lang LaSalle, which in my days anyway I knew better as King Sturge because it's got merged and taken over. And you're also a board member of the Cardiff Enterprise Zone, I believe. So, James Medway on my left, a senior economist with the New Economics Foundation. Max Munday on my far right, who many of you all know as director of the Welsh Economic Research Unit for Cardiff University. And last but by no means least, on my far left, Dave Adamson, who of course was former chief exec of the Centre for Regeneration Excellence in Wales, and is now more of a free spirit, if I can put it that way, and a visiting professor with the University of Wales Trinity St David's. Now they're going to be able to do an introduction of a maximum of 7 minutes each, and I'm going to be looking at my watch and waving at you frantically if you start to go over it. And then we'll start to open up the debate. So, Chris, can I ask you to take the floor first?
Thank you. So, thank you, Elizabeth. Well, it's been a good week, as Elizabeth said, for jobs in Wales. On Monday, you will have seen the announcement of 600 jobs in Bridgend. CGI used to be called Logica. These are pretty good jobs. They are IT-based, office-based, including network engineers and security specialists. Now, Logica, or CGI as they now are a New York Stock Exchange listed company. But also on Monday this week, there was Tenneco Walker Automotive. And they took a property that we were marketing up in Dowlice, Merthyr Tydfil, 165,000 square foot. Now, I can tell you that's a tough market. But there are 220 net new jobs associated with that. Proper jobs at a strong wage, as I say, in a town that will, where these will make a real difference. And by the way, Tenneco, New York Stock Exchange listed, and Tenneco comes from the Tennessee Gas Company. That's where the name comes from. And in this morning's Western Mail, we had the announcement in the Enterprise Zone. The re-announcement, because it happened in the summer, but it's Alert Logic, Texas-based company, opening with a promise of 135 jobs in office-based, high value-added computer IT security. And the same enterprise zone is the area that Deloitte are looking at relocating 500 back-office jobs from London down to Cardiff. Potentially, that should come through in the next few months, one would hope. Those two were announced in the Western Mail over recent weeks, but also, let's stick with the Western Mail. Early this week, we had the publication of the Fast Growth 50. These are our strongest growing SMEs, and a number feed off our anchor companies. Indeed, the number one was Hydro Industries, and their biography says that their key customers are Shell and Tata Steel. And the month before, we had the Western Mail Education Supplement. It highlighted the strong working relationship between schools and industry, in particular Mysteg and Ford Engine Plants. And there's a Lefty school that won the Airbus Award for its work with the German company Schaeffler. So what does foreign direct investment offer to Wales? Well, I think it offers the chance to create quick wins, strong employment clusters, and supply chain opportunities for our local economies. And foreign investment by multinational companies can also provide a channel through which new ideas, working practices, and technologies transfer to Wales. But it also exposes our indigenous businesses to more competitive pressure. Well, hopefully that makes them stronger. And yes, we would prefer new homegrown, high value-added businesses. And we should do all we can to encourage these. But let's be honest, the reality is we sometimes don't have the capital or the entrepreneurial spirit necessarily to create those. So we need to nurture those areas, and inward investment in the meantime can create very valuable jobs. And who's going to save our economy? Well, the public sector's got no money, and in the main, the general public, they're sort of tightening their belt as well. But the corporate world is actually very strong at the moment in terms of cash reserves, and the difficulty has been trying to encourage business investment. Barclays Bank, only a couple of months ago, stated that globally, the top 5,000 companies have a cash amounted of £4.1 trillion. The FTSE 100 has a balance sheet of 700 billion and cash reserves of 65 billion. And let's be honest, even if they had to go to the bank, they wouldn't go to the bank. If they want to borrow money, you go to the loan markets, the bond markets. So, you know, the corporate world has got the money. It's about leveraging that. Now, women investments had some bad press, particularly between 1998 and 2008, when we had offshoring. And this was the pressure from low-cost economies. And this certainly affected a number of mainstream manufacturing businesses in Wales. And yes, there were closures after 2008, but my sense is that the reasons for closures after 2008 were subtly different. Now, if you lose your job, you know, you're not too worried about the difference there, are you? But actually, the downturn led to certain closures after 2008, but the reasons for closure are now different. And we're now seeing a return of these businesses, and we're seeing reshoring. And the reasons for this are many and varied. But the CBI recently carried out a survey that suggested that key issues were quality control in emerging economies, rising labour costs in emerging economies, definitely an issue of intellectual security, and also a general need for faster market responsiveness. Now, a strong example, a company that I've been involved in, is Sony at Pencoy. Now, the Japanese earthquake and the tsunami actually led to real issues with all of Japanese industry in terms of taking out large parts of their supply chain. And Sony had really been looking at putting their high value-added activities into Japan. And so in response to that, they carried a global resilience program, which allows them to look at poles of growth around the world. And if they come to Europe, for Sony, it means either Germany or the UK. So that's why you can buy a 25 grand TV camera that's made in Sony Pencoy. It's the only place outside Japan that Sony allow that to happen. But at the other end of the scale, Sony make a Raspberry Pi. It's a little handheld computer used by A-level students, £25. So why on earth is that being made in Bridgend? I ask the question, it's quite simple. If you fill a container load up with Raspberry Pis, you've got tens of thousands of pounds tied up for 16 weeks on the high seas. Well, that working capital, if you make it locally in Western Europe, you can turn that two or three times. There are lots of different reasons why we're seeing reshoring. So what needs to be done to build upon these successes? Well, I think it's about creating a stable and consistent policy background and a business environment which is attractive to investors at both a macro UK level and also within the devolved policy of Welsh Government. And at a UK level, actually, we have a very attractive corporate tax environment and a flexible labour market. But let's also look at risks at a UK level. Our attitude to Europe is difficult in terms of encouraging investment. Also, immigration. There are also issues of infrastructure. You see the issue of aviation capacity. And from a Welsh perspective, again, we've got positives and negatives. We need to make Wales 10% more attractive than England in order to encourage this investment to come to Wales. And we can do this, and in fact we are doing this, through planning reform, through the EU grant regime, workforce training, and building upon our key sectors. But there's also clear risks. There's risks on infrastructure. My views on the M4 relief are well known. But also, in addition, the recent Scottish referendum raises the theoretical argument of a risk premium associated with devolved nations. Now, thankfully, I've seen no evidence of a risk premium emerging, but we must be cautious that we remain an open economy and very much at the heart of the single UK market. So a final thought from me is to ensure a focus upon our existing investors. I work in professional services. We're here in Eversheds. In professional services, there's a saying, it's six times easier to keep an existing client than to win a new client. It's the same for Wales. Now, we've managed to keep hold of Sony, but we lost Iowa, and we lost Hitachi, and we lost a large part of Panasonic, for example. So, and you look at, see, if you keep that company, then you can get them to reinvest for the next life cycle. We have a strong backbone of multinationals in Wales, and we need to keep a structured programme of engagement to ensure that we retain what we have. We work with them to reinvest for the next life cycle, and we also allow them to bring their next project to Wales as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for the invite to speak and be a part of the debate this evening. In case you're wondering, because I do feel like a bit of an outsider here, in case you're wondering, I ended up being commissioned by the Welsh TEC and NEF ended up being commissioned, the New Economics Foundation, which is a London-based think tank, ended up being commissioned by the Welsh TEC last year to prepare a report on different approaches to industrial strategy, which I realise is probably a slightly unfashionable term in lots of ways, but making a bit of a return now. Industrial strategy in Wales and different approaches to economic development. And although the debate here is framed as a debate, as an either or, is it inward investment or is it, you know, developing local sources of growth and jobs, employment and all the rest of it, I think I would start by saying that, you know, this isn't a necessary sort of zero-sum game. The first one is that it's not the case you have to pick a completely either or choice between these two things. The difficulty comes in is if you start to focus excessively, I think, on the need to attract inward investment, foreign direct investment, and start to develop a belief that the successes, which are evident, I think, even if somewhat more briefly than perhaps you'd wish, evident, would be able to return, and would be able to return easily in the near future, and would present some kind of alternative or long-run solution to the problem of employment creation and growth and all the rest of it. It was striking, I think, and like I said, I speak here as someone who is, you know, not a native of Wales and not immediately familiar with Wales, but who is gaining a bit of familiarity. It was striking, in fact, taking a long view, because I think you have to take a long view if you're talking about what you want to do that's going to work in 10 or 20 years' time. It was striking that Wales has been effective in the past, and effective over a long period of time, at mobilising capital from external sources, from places that aren't Wales. But if you take the period over the immediate post-war period, from the end of the Second World War right the way through to the end of the 1970s, very effective at mobilising, really, sources of public capital that are mobilised through Westminster and through London. And then very effective, impressively effective, over the 1980s and into the 1990s at mobilising foreign direct investment from the rest of the world. And that is a strength, and that's something to work from. The difficulty I think you run up against is that the idea that out there there's a big pot of cash that can be got and taken and invested in Wales, and that this can be won without too much or excessive effort, I think, is starting to lead you down a rather difficult path. The pattern of foreign direct investment generally, if we switch from looking at what's the history to looking at the global picture, the pattern of foreign direct investment generally, since the crash, but building up before then, since 2008, has been quite striking. That aside from a general decline in capital flows globally, which a few years back McKinsey estimated a 60% decline in general capital flows around the world, cross-border international capital flows, FDI declining somewhat less than that since 2008. So this drop in this big, powerful engine of globalisation, those capital flows, a less substantial drop in FDI, but a drop nonetheless globally, but a shift in the pattern of where foreign direct investment is taking place, away from mature, developed economies and into the developing world. Strikingly so, from about 2011, 2012 onwards, if you look at the UN figures, you can see that the majority of FDI, of inward investment now taking place, is going to the developing world. And that's from a smaller base than we had a few years back. So in other words, the total amount of capital out there that could be tapped into is reduced. Now, it may start to pick up over the next few years. You know, as a global recovery, if the IMF is to be believed, gathers pace, then perhaps it will pick up. Although, of course, and I'll come back to this point, there are fairly substantial reasons for some scepticism about that. It may start to pick up. But within that, the general bias of where people are looking to do foreign direct investment is not in mature, developed economies like Wales and like the UK more generally. Even if, for a brief period and for a while, it's possible to gain some successes, it doesn't strike me as likely, looking at the tendency of how the world economy is growing, where capital is flowing to, that we'll be able to say that this is something we can win easily into the future. That in practice, you're going to have to work harder and harder to get what is there and to convince people that Wales is in fact the place to invest. There are a number of strengths here, of course, but you have to work harder to get there. And that implies, at a time of fairly limited resources, that perhaps this isn't going to deliver you where you want to get to. The second part is the point about investment, which I think is well taken, because it's the heart of this. Unless investment happens, you don't get employment, you don't get job growth, you don't get growth more generally. Unless investment takes place, none of these things happen. So the key to this is driving investment. And again, the period since 2008 for the UK, it's not a particularly happy one in this respect. yes, companies are sitting on immense cash piles. But if you take major corporations in the UK, the usual estimate is there is something around £750 billion pounds worth of cash deposits tied up in corporate, effectively in corporate bank accounts that they're sitting on. And they're sitting on and not investing. Investment was the sharpest, sort of sharpest fall of any part of GDP in the crash of 2008, dropped by about £40 billion. It was already low, of course, for the UK in general, low compared to, say, Germany, France, other comparable G7 economies. Sufficiently low today, after the fall, that if you take the investment spending as a share of GDP, the amount of money that we take the whole of the UK puts into investment as a share of GDP, its rate of investment is comparable more or less to El Salvador, for example. It's a very, very low investment economy, and it's got worse since the crash of 2008. So that's the situation we're faced with here. I'm talking about the UK because, of course, it's quite hard to get, as far as I can tell, to get any figures for Wales within that, but the few we do have suggest that this is a pattern that is even worse for Wales in terms of domestic investment. The critical issue here is that we're leaning increasingly towards, since 2008, an economy at the UK level which is focused more and more on what takes place in London. The figures for job creation between 2010 and 2013 are quite incredible. 80% of private sector jobs created were created in London over that period of time. It's becoming a little more balanced now, but not to the extent that you would want. An economy that's increasingly focused on London, increasingly focused on a London economy, which is itself very much tied into rising house market, property wealth, and the creation of that kind of circuit of demand that rising property prices can deliver for at least some people. But this creates increased demand. The increased demand creates a space for more jobs. The space for more jobs means you have more people moving to London. That in turn creates demand for housing. That in turn pushes up house prices. This is the circle of the London economy that does actually very little for the rest of the country unless you work quite hard to make it go in your direction. And that to start to try and tie yourself to what's happening more generally in London and to start to try and tie yourself to what to me looks like a fairly unsustainable set of economic circumstances, it is striking, it's extremely striking, that this far into a recovery, and it's good, you know, 18 months, approaching 2 years now, that you've seen consistent increasing GDP, we're still looking at a situation where real incomes, average real incomes, are falling below that point. They're not rising. It's the longest sustained decline in real incomes across the country since the 1870s. But you're still seeing declining real incomes and yet rising consumption demand tied to an increase, of course, in household debt. But none of these things add up to a sustainable economy. That the further away you can get from, as it were, that London bubble economy, the further away you can get from and create your own sources of capital investment that are distinct from what is taking place in London, that is steered by London institutions in general, the better. That is not sustainable to see yourself as part of this. I mean, just to pick up on the point about the Scottish referendum, I'll wrap up on this with a couple of suggestions. Pick on the point about the Scottish referendum, the issue in Scotland wasn't so much that Scotland was the risk if it went independent, of course. It was that London would be the risk if Scotland would go independent, precisely because you lose the North Sea oil revenues, and that's where the source of instability was appearing. So I don't think you should be afraid of trying to do something different here. I don't think you should be afraid of picking up on what is a history in Wales of alternative approaches to running businesses, cooperatives, of developing things like local sources of financing, of breaking out of a model of capital investment and bank lending, which is attached to the big four or five banks, and instead looking to develop local sources of banking and finance and the rest of it. And that Wales has a potential advantage, unlike much of the rest of the UK outside of London, much of the rest of it, certainly of England outside of London, in that it does have a devolved administration with some capacity, with a solid civil society around it, with some ability to start to deliver some of those things with a bit of creativity and imagination. The key to this is getting out of the idea that somebody else is going to turn up and invest here. It has to be a local source as the primary focus for how development and growth and job creation is going to happen.
Thank you.
I'm going to struggle a bit with 7 minutes. That's normally how long it takes for a story or anecdote or joke, but anyway. Here goes.
Consider you're tweeting the whole time. That's short, isn't it?
I've never tweeted in my life. You know, it's not going to happen. Anyway, I'm going to try and argue just a little bit from history. I'm going to talk to a little bit, no news, I'm quite a fan of inward investment. Much of my research career has been looking at inward investment. Just at the outset, and I guess this is a theme that's being picked up by Chris and James, and I would concur to a certain extent that inward investment's never going to be a complete panacea for treating the economic development problems that face Wales. And attracting foreign capital is not costless, is it? I mean, we've had some pretty good cases of that, quite near to here. I mean, almost within eyesight of here is the remains of LG. I mean, it's not a costless exercise. And there's a series of explicit costs that we can see, and there's more implicit costs in attracting investment that we cannot see. However, while agreeing that the economic impacts of inward investment will vary across firms, and they will vary across sector, I do believe in general that when you survey the academic evidence on the economic effects associated with foreign capital, it's well developed, and it does show a series of positive regional economic impacts that result. Just go back a little bit in history. I mean, we have a very long inward investment history in Wales. I mean, arguably, there's a bit of debate about this, but it probably stretches back to 1867, decision by Gracia to develop a chemical plant at Ruabon. Far back as the 1960s, I mean, what the argument I'm making here is you've got a steady contribution through time. As far back as the 1950s, foreign-owned manufacturers in Wales employed about 14,000. By the 60s, foreign manufacturing made up about 10% of Welsh manufacturing employment. Steady growth in the 70s. And we had that bit of a blip, didn't we, 1979 to 1983. Not a happy time to be in Wales, where we lost about a third of our manufacturing employment. However, during that period, during the time of those tight budgets to Geoffrey Howe, the contribution of the foreign sector held up in Wales better than the contribution of the domestic. Your output, the index of output in the foreign sector was stronger than it was in the domestic sector. During the late 80s, we see a boom in inward investment. We lost Shotton, didn't we? Steelworks up there in northeast Wales, 8,000 redundancies overnight. But suddenly, we really took off, didn't we? Between about 82 and 94, maybe, we were attracting about 16% on average of the foreign manufacturing projects and jobs coming into the UK. We've only got about 4 or 5% of the employment of UK employment. That's a very good relative performance. Yes, as the other speakers have mentioned, there was a bit of a tailing off, wasn't there, in the 90s. We've had the current, we've just come through the recessionary period. We've seen in the press that our inward investment performance has dipped, but now it's picking up again. So it's a long history. I think that's important to recognise. You are talking about hundreds of thousands of equivalent job years in these foreign plants. So here we are in 2014. When you look back over that the history of that foreign capital, I mean, it's very, very important that one takes what I would hope is a balanced scorecard approach. So when you're looking at this, and maybe when we come to debate this, there's several bullet points really you've got to think about in your evaluation. You've got to think about the potential for productivity spillovers from the foreign sector to the domestic sector, and from the foreign sector to other parts of the foreign sector. That's important. It's not just jobs. Invest in Britain Bureau, the old DTI, and going back a long time, it was never just about jobs. It was about the productivity spillovers, which you can also get from foreign capital. Competition effects. Bringing in foreign capital can help to break down domestic monopolies. There's a series of allocative effects that you need to think about. There are trade effects, value chain effects, buyer-supplier effects, job effects, labour market effects, wage spillover effects. Also, and Wales has been a testbed for this, there's been a series of industrial relations effectively linked to foreign capital, particularly Japanese capital that came in the 1970s. A lot of interesting IR issues came to surface and were dealt with in Wales. Also, new techniques, foreign capital brings in new techniques to regions. So, I'm nearly out of time here, but if you look at that balanced scorecard, I mean, I've just got a few few bullets to finish it. Employment. Between about 86 and 2005, it's estimated around 1,400 foreign projects brought in about £13 billion worth of capital spend, around about 100,000 new jobs, and around about 67,000 safeguarding jobs. Those are planned, even if you discount, you know, okay, you take 30% off that, outturn, that's still a pretty good performance. Stability, that's an important one, I think. How stable is the foreign sector compared to the domestic sector? Well, I've recently undertaken some analysis with Bob McNabb at the business school, and we looked at Welsh registered manufacturing employment between 67 and 2003, and foreign-owned plants have a significantly better survival rate than domestically owned plants and firms. Earnings. Foreign firms generally, particularly in the manufacturing sector, pay more than domestic firms. That's been shown, that's on the record. You've only got to look at companies' accounts databases in Wales to show it. Productivity. Foreign-owned firms in Wales are more productive than their domestic counterparts. You might expect that, given the capital intensity of some of the foreign sector in the Welsh economy. Foreign firms dominate our exports. I mean, just while Christmas, or a Valero lorry went past it. I mean, there's 10% of the UK's unleaded coming out of that refinery down there. But these companies, I know, like Valero, Tata, Merco, Dow Corning, General Electric, Ford, they're some of our biggest exports. You lose those, you lose Welsh exports, a considerable proportion of Welsh exports. Local sourcing. These firms, they buy things in the local economy. So they support indirect employment, indirect output in the Welsh economy. And I could go on and on and on with those sorts of benefits. Just to finish, I've been talking for 8 minutes and 4 seconds. I would argue, just in finishing, foreign manufacturing, foreign service investment is relevant, I would argue, to the economic and social needs of large parts of Wales today, as it was in the 70s, as it was in the 80s. Foreign manufacturing particularly, I would argue, being closely linked to Welsh Government aspirations in terms of employment growth, productivity growth in the Welsh economy, and increases in value added. A long-term fall in the presence of the foreign sector in the Welsh economy will increase the distance between Wales and the remainder of the UK in terms of gross value added per capita. Yeah? You start to lose that foreign sector, the gap, as we conventionally measure economic growth, it will start to widen considerably. And I also believe that foreign direct investment attraction particularly is complementary to other policy goals, such as the promotion of entrepreneurship, innovation, sustainable development, and promoting ICT in Wales. Thank you.
One of the advantages or disadvantages of a mask is that you have to rewrite everything as thought of. So if this appears a little incoherent, it's because I'm thinking on my feet. Firstly, thanks to Lee and the team for putting this together. I think this is the kind of essential debate we need in Wales to challenge ourselves collectively and our political leaders. So absolutely great opportunity to really think through some of the key policy issues in Wales. I'm going to start in a similar position to James. I'm not against inward investment. I don't like the idea of a polarity that if I do one or we do the other. We need a mixed economy of interventions, all of them, as Elizabeth said at the beginning, to promote prosperity for Wales. And we have the announcements already referred to this week demonstrate the value of inward investment, and historically, as Max has referred to, some of the obvious advantages that it has brought to the Welsh economy. However, we do need a mixed economy of approaches, and there is a sense in which we are failing still. GDP in Wales, GVA, remains consistently 75% of the UK average. If you go up to Blaenau Gwent, it drops to 57% of the UK average. So we're missing a trick somewhere. Even when foreign direct investment works brilliantly, we're still failing. 33% of children in Wales live in poverty. The disconnect between their families, their communities, and the inward investment economy is almost absolute. It's a disconnect in space, geographically remote distance from the modes of development, N4, 855 and north. It's a dislocation in terms of the skills that population possesses and the type of skills that the companies we've heard about today look for and need in the areas where they invest. So in some ways, we're framing the Welsh economy in a particular way. And I borrow from Carol Williams's work here. It's a kind of a growth-focused economy. We don't ask what the growth is for. We've now vast international evidence that growth benefits an international economic elite. It does not reach down into the poor populations in Europe, in the United States, and certainly not in the undeveloped world. So we need a slightly different model to run alongside the conventional model. I'm basing some of this on work Mark Lang and I did in Tredegar, where we did something called the Deep Place Study. And we used a number of theoretical approaches to inform that, transition theory, total place theory. But the fundamental economic element of it was foundational economy theory, borrowed from Manchester Business School, Carol Williams and his team. And what that suggests is that there's another economy, a highly localized economy, that furnishes the mundane needs of individuals and families in communities. It's food, housing, energy, healthcare, education, transport, social care. So things that we all need every day to reproduce ourselves and our lives. It's an absolutely fundamental economy. It is the very foundation of society. Currently employs between 30 and 40% of people, depending on which bits you count. So we looked at how can you promote that foundational economy at the local level so that it can engage with those populations that aren't drawn into the foreign direct investment world, don't have the skills, aren't in the right place, don't have the transport links. And so we looked particularly at four sectors. We looked at the care sector. We have a broken care model in the UK. It pays appalling wages, delivers appalling care. We looked at a way of transforming that, looking at methods used in Bologna and Quebec. We looked at energy conservation and generation, following the German Energiewende model. Massive program of energy conservation, bringing our aging housing stock up to a good low carbon performance, our public buildings into a low carbon performance, schemes like shared communal heating systems, for example. Energy generation, we miss huge amounts of potential here in Wales. We have a baseload grid system in the UK that seems sacrosanct. We need to explore a much more diversified model of energy generation. We looked at e-commerce and employment, getting people working remotely from where they live with large international companies. Fast broadband now reaches right into the heads of the valleys, and there are opportunities for employment of people in those sectors. I think the final thing I want to say is this whole model of foreign direct investment is intricately connected with the idea of the globalized economy and a very neoliberal approach, which sees growth for growth's sake as the only end of economic activity. And that model, even when it works brilliantly, I don't think anyone in the room would disagree that London is seen as the powerhouse, one of the most competitive global cities, almost still the financial capital of the world still, despite the recession. Sobering statistic. In the five inner London boroughs, 33% of children live in poverty, exactly the same rate as the South West boroughs. So even when this model works brilliantly at its international and global best, it fails a third of the population. We have to think of something to run in parallel with it that reaches into that population, that develops an alternative economic model, and delivers prosperity for all.
Thank you.